My first guest this hour is in love. You're in love with your city, right?
I love Seattle.
Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
You're running to be the mayor of the city you love.
I'm doing that.
Primary ballots are due August 1st. We're getting to know all the leading candidates on KUOW, so we want to find out what your love of Seattle means to you, the relationship you want to have with this city. First of all, what do you want us to know about you personally? Some of us know you and some don't.
Well, I love Seattle because I'm a lifelong resident here, third generation, actually, Seattleite, loved the Pacific Northwest, grew up enjoying the great outdoors. I was in Boy Scout Troop 53, which actually was the oldest certified Boy Scout troop in our area for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
But our scout leaders...
What kind of scout were you in Troop 53?
A good scout.
Uh-huh.
I won't go beyond that.
Uh-huh.
Our scout leaders, though, were the former 442nd soldiers who came back after World War II, and they were taskmasters, believe me. But it was the best life lessons I could have had, you know, from some of the most honorable people that I've had the pleasure of knowing. So it's that framed me.
What life lesson did you learn?
Oh, honor, hard work. All of those, the work ethics that are involved with success, about standing solid for your principles, that's everything that they stood for.
Mm-hmm.
They enlisted to prove that Japanese Americans were loyal citizens and didn't deserve to be locked up in concentration camps, and to prove that the Constitution needs to be defended. That's why I am who I am, is because... I've learned that lesson that we have to be constantly vigilant to protect our civil rights and liberties.
Are you finding your vigilance rising this last several months?
Well, it's always been on high alert, but yes, the last several months have been extremely condition red. You know, we're getting attacked on so many different fronts against our civil rights and personal liberties. And a lot of people wonder why... They question whether I'm a real Democrat in regard to a lot of my libertarian side, but that's who I am. That's what my community raised me to be, and so that's why I've sponsored bills in the legislature, for instance, to prevent state and local law enforcement from enforcing Trump's anti-Muslim.
Right, that's a libertarian issue for you.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And as well as, for instance, I sponsored a bill in the Patriot Act that was proposed years back, actually. There was a provision in that act that allowed the president to indefinitely detain anybody for any reason without due process. So I had a bill to not allow state and local law enforcement to enforce that presidential order as well.
Well, let's talk about some of the issues for someone who wants to be the mayor of this city. We asked KUOW listeners to tell us what Seattle needs most, and the top three answers were cost of housing. There were others, but I am asking all the candidates, what would you do about the cost of housing that Mayor Murray isn't doing, if anything? Or would you stay the course?
No, I definitely would not stay the course. You know, cost of housing is affected by two major things right now, in my opinion. Number one is obviously the property values increases, but I'll get to that in a second. One of the things that Seattle has a problem of doing is trying to move towards a more progressive tax system. And so when we, as Seattleites, are so good-hearted and want to do the right things, but we keep going back to the same regressive tax sources like property tax and sales tax to fund those good things, that's making it cost prohibitive for seniors, those on fixed incomes, low and middle income folk to stay in Seattle. The other thing is that because of the increasing property values themselves, which also raises the property taxes, that exists because of the huge gap between the number of people that want to live in Seattle and the available housing units we actually have for those people to live in. So that imbalance in the supply and demand is shooting the property values through the roof. The current system that is in place is sort of, to me, it's a non-starter, because as we see how it's being implemented, this HALAB program with the MHA set-asides on affordable housing for development, it's not going to get anywhere near producing the amount of housing we need to offset that imbalance in the supply and demand.
Basically, this is requiring developers to set aside affordable units or kick in some money
Correct.
To help pay for that.
Correct.
Not enough.
Not enough. And in fact, it's the wrong strategy, because it's like asking developers to do the right thing. Some developers might do the right thing and set aside plenty of affordable housing, at least enough to house the people that they've displaced through their development process. But developers are in there to make money, and we shouldn't expect them to do otherwise. Maybe that's some of my union negotiating background is, you know, we expect business to negotiate for business, just as we expect workers and the unions that represent them to negotiate on their behalf, and then you come to a middle someplace through a negotiated process.
So then what's your solution that's better than the current way of getting developers to pay for affordable housing?
So in order to really offset that imbalance in the supply and demand, the city has to go head on with building public housing or supporting nonprofit-based housing solutions. Public housing is not some people might have an image of in their minds, because when you say public housing, all of a sudden people develop this image about the slums or the projects of old. It doesn't have to be that way. Public housing just means housing owned by the public. We could build really nice places, you know, the Yesler Terrace thing, for instance. We sold off property, public property, to Vulcan in order for Vulcan to develop that, and for a guarantee of something like 500 affordable units to replace the ones that they're demolishing.
Well, I need to ask you about where we'd get the money to pay for that, because on Facebook, Natalie says, Seattle can't seem to manage its own money. Revenue at an all-time high, and we keep getting asked for more. Would we be asked for more tax money to pay for public housing? And if so, who pays?
No, and I totally agree with that. We need accountability and transparency in the money that we're already getting, you know, before we go to the voters again for more revenue. What I'm proposing is a very creative solution, that a strategy that's used internationally for infrastructure development, but not used in the U.S. except for one exception in North Dakota, and that is to create a publicly owned municipal bank. Through this banking strategy, it'll do a couple of things. It benefits us on the revenue side because it's a bank. It'll make money with the taxpayers' dollars without raising taxes. That's a beautiful thing. But it will also drastically increase our financing capacity because it will leverage the core capital within the bank. I don't want to start sounding too wacky, but
You talk to me about recapitalization all day. Actually, though, speaking of which, what if
glazing over already?
Well, what if we're in a housing bubble? I think all of us remember what happened when the banks struggled and flailed, and we paid. Do we want to get into the publicly owned bank business?
No, the banks would flail. This would actually protect us from those problems that the other banks were into, because they got so over-leveraged that even a little pinprick in that bubble collapsed their system out there. The Bank of North Dakota, which is the model that I'm trying to emulate, actually just last year reported its 13th consecutive year of record profits for the people of North Dakota. So that means it was during that banking bubble that you just referred to, it was making record profits. Hmm. So it has the ability to stabilize revenues throughout these economic cycles.
Okay, well, if we fear that it's too wonky, listeners can go to your campaign website or many other places online and learn about municipal-owned banks and the Bank of North Dakota.
Even better than that, though, we're doing a public forum on it this coming Saturday at the University of Washington, Kane Hall, from 7 to 9 p.m., where we have public banking experts coming in to talk about it.
That sinks in more than a website. So Kane Hall this weekend. I'm talking with Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa, who is a candidate candidate for mayor right now. And before we leave taxes, we talked about Natalie saying we're overtaxed, and you kind of agreed. Yakov says Seattle's biggest problem is the rising cost of living and the gap between the rich and poor. The best way to address this is to tax the rich. Do you support the income tax?
I do support that. I agree with Mr. Yakov.
And what if the income tax is not upheld by the courts and Seattle can't do it? Then what?
Yeah, well, I think it was passed because it's a test, a constitutional test.
Yeah.
Whether we can implement it or not just depends on the Supreme Court. My skepticism, though, comes from the fact that there is a statute that may bar it from even getting to the Supreme Court. And
right.
They change the statute first.
The state law.
And we haven't gotten to that point.
Yeah.
However, the strategy that they're using to get around that statutory bar may hold water. We'll have to see if the Supreme Court can decide whether or not which section of the code actually controls. Is it the section that says cities can control taxation within their own limits, or is it the other section of the code that says they can't implement income tax?
Oh, statutes and codes.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay.
Your eyes are glazing over again.
No. It takes a lot. I'm interested. I would like to circle back, though, to something you told me at the very beginning when we first started talking. You said, I'm a lifelong Seattleite, third generation, a lifelong Beacon Hill resident, right?
Yes, sir.
So how do you, let's talk about changing Seattle. How do you feel when you see Beacon Hill's new construction and new people and richer people and the new handmade pita restaurant and all those changes? Was Seattle better before the newcomers?
I wouldn't say better. It was just different. I do miss the fact that kids don't play in the streets anymore. You know?
Why don't they play in the streets?
Well, the social attitudes have just changed. We've moved on from then. You know, I think about the days when, you know, my dad, should I admit this, he was a smoker. He just sent me with a few bucks to walk two blocks to the corner grocery store and buy him a pack of cigarettes and walk it home to him, right?
Uh-huh.
And we'd play kickball out in the intersection using the manhole cover as a home base and, you know, that kind of stuff. And number one, there aren't that many kids in the neighborhood anymore, but I get the sense that parents are so protective of their kids now, more so than they were back then. My parents would send me, I think I was maybe 10 years old or so, they'd send me on the bus by myself to ride down to the YMCA downtown to take swimming lessons.
Yeah.
And the bus driver would look after us. And I remember the bus driver just letting me play with the door opener switch. I thought that was so cool. And he kind of explained to me how it worked. And, you know, it was more a sense of community back then.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Community, and you got an exploration when you were a
yeah.
little kid.
Yeah.
Well, that's a conversation we have all across America. Do you think in Seattle that our cult, have we lost a great Seattle culture and are we lesser for it?
I think we are losing it very quickly through the displacement that's happening. You know, in Beacon Hill, for instance, that was one of those informally redlined areas where people of color, families of color, were only allowed to buy in. That's why there was, back in the day, so many families of color up there. But increasingly now, those families, the people that moved into there and bought those houses originally, their children can't afford to live in the city, and those that are remaining are on fixed incomes. And so as we continue to increase property taxes on them, they're less and less able to afford to stay in their own homes. So they're having to sell. You know, I was just at a Beacon Hill festival a few weeks ago, and one of the leaders said they can't count how many people have come up to them and told them they have to move out of Seattle because their house was torn down and replaced with development.
Oh, there's so many questions I could ask about that. I mean, for one thing, you brought up race, and I wonder, you know, when Ed Murray became mayor, people said, of course, a gay-friendly city like Seattle would have an openly gay mayor. It fits us. But why do you think Seattle's never had an Asian-American mayor? I don't think we have, right?
No.
And that would certainly fit us. Do you have any opinion about that?
Yeah, well, Seattle is down to, I think, 20% of the registered voters are people of color. So it's hard to leverage, you know, you have to appeal to social conscience and justice. And I don't run on the fact that I'm would be the first Asian. I'm running on the issues. And I'm hoping that a lot of my issues, which actually are old strategies that we've gotten away from. We've gotten away from democracy, pretty much. Our city government has reverted from a government of, by, and for the people to a top-down model. It's like government of, by, and for the people with the most money anymore. So decisions are being made from the top and implemented onto the neighborhoods, and everybody, this is a common theme I hear throughout the city, is that nobody feels like they've ever been consulted on any of the major decisions, or if they were asked their opinion, that it was not given any consideration whatsoever. So that's fundamentally a change that has to happen before we can move forward on dealing with a lot of these neighborhood issues and the displacement that's going on.
Well, speaking of displacement, Seattle's new navigation center opened this week, 24-hour shelter with social services. Would you do anything differently about homelessness from what Mayor Murray is doing now, or would you stay the course?
Well, that navigation center is a huge issue in Little Saigon because we can't even get to talking about the merits of a navigation center, which there are good things about it, because of the process that was followed or not followed in citing that thing. That there again, it underscores my previous point about top-down government. The decision was made, they're just going to put that in the heart of Little Saigon in the International District, and that was done. So when the community riled up and rallied against it, the mayor put a temporary hold on the opening and said he would consider the community's input at that point. So the community went through this whole process of trying to hold a series of hearings and get feedback from the neighborhood and the people that live there. And then halfway through that process, they were developing a list of issues that the city needs to address. And then the mayor said, never mind, we're going to just open it.
Well, what if the mayor had done more asking for input, and then the input from Little Saigon neighborhood had been, no, we don't want it. Well, now where is it going to go?
That was someplace where they were at. They were at the point saying, so we know the decision is made to cite it here.
Right.
So we will just ask for what are the conditions that we're most concerned about affecting our neighborhoods. And they never got to finish that process. They had accepted the fact that it would be cited there. So to me, it was just totally disrespectful of the community itself.
Did you think that had an economic tinge to it, a racial and ethnicity, or just is this just about government top down?
I'm not going to assign motives on why it happened the way it did.
Okay. Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa, running for mayor of Seattle. We're running out of time, and I know one thing I haven't asked you about was I learned that you're apparently a big vaping guy. This event the other night.
You don't mind me whacking it out right now?
Yeah. Oh, you brought it, huh?
I got.
What's the big thing about vaping with you?
So I used to smoke Swisher Sweets, I'll admit.
Uh-huh.
And so I was up to about a pack of those, which contains five of them a day.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's not so cool when you have to sit close to people, especially in the legislature. Uh-huh. So I switched to vaping because it's better for you. And for over 2 years now, 2 years from May, I have not had a stogie. Except when I was a delegate to the Democratic National Convention, they would not allow us to bring a vape in, so I had to smoke stogies.
You had to smoke a stogie.
I just had to do it. I'm sorry.
Did it taste wonderful again, or just
I
just
horrible.
Want my cherry bubble.
No, it
vaping.
It tasted horrible, but
okay. Yeah. Favorite flavor, cherry bubble. What's better, puckerberry? Cherry,
like,
Cosmic Fog?
I like Mango Tango.
Mango Tango. Yeah. No, I pegged you for a Mango Tango guy. Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa. Before we go, anything that you want to say? Because I've been just asking all the questions.
No, I've been throughout this city, and people are such good hearts, you know, and I'm really appreciate this opportunity to just be able to speak with everybody. It's wonderful.
Well, good luck in the legislature, if that's what it is, but good luck at the helm of the city of Seattle if you're the next mayor. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that.
Primary ballots due August 1st. Welcome to the studio, and great to meet you.
It's a pleasure being here. Thanks, Bill.